good morning. I'm glad to be here. As Erling said, I'm working at the radiology department. I'm a radiologist. And I'm going to speak about this interesting topic about radiology and breast implants. Every year, at least in the United States, there are approximately 384,000 women having breast implants. And we know that approximately 1 out of 7 women get breast cancer sometime in their life. So the consequence of that is that more than 50,000 women every year in the United States with implants will have breast cancer. And therefore, it's very important to consider how to do the correct diagnostics on these people, on these women. And in addition to the 50,000 women with breast implants that get breast cancer, we also have a lot of implant problems like intracapsular rupture and also some extracapsular ruptures. So we need to have diagnostic methods to find all these things, whether we're speaking about cancer or implant problems. So, I mean, this is a patient with both, she has both capsular contracture and she also has intracapsular ruptures as well, bilaterally, and her implants were removed. And this is the right one, as you see. This is almost more like an orange than a smooth implant. And the other, the left side, in the same way. And when we take out the implants, we see that these are calcified, these have capsular contracture, and not very nice. But this is a bit too late to see this. We want to see the problems with the implants when they're in the patient. So that's what I'm going to speak about today. And I'm going to take you through different radiological modalities about different imaging techniques for imaging breasts and also for imaging the breast implants. So the first modality we have is plain radiography. This is our youngest radiologist here in Tromsø. Her name is Britt. And she's, fortunately, she's very interested in breast implants and also in breast diagnostics and breast radiology. So I think you'll see more of her during this small session. But plain radiography, normal X-ray, that's not very useful in breast diagnostics. Of course, if you have a breast implant like this, a second generation implant with a lot of calcification in the capsule, of course, then you might see something on the X-ray, like this one. This is a calcified implant. You see, the capsule is not only capsular contracture, here we have a lot of calcification as well. And of course, you see this implant very well. And you also see it on the lateral view here. You see that the implant is round shaped, it's not anatomically shaped. Well, this is not an anatomically shaped implant anyhow, but we see that it's more round than we want it to be, and it's calcified all the way. And on the right side, we can almost not see the implant at all, even though we have small calcifications here as well. So the normal implant is not visible on chest X-ray. Well, we might see the shadow of it, but it's not in a way that we can do diagnostics. So therefore, we can just forget about normal plain X-ray. Well, sometimes we see the implants on the chest X-ray, but we can't use it for diagnostics, unless it's severe calcifications, but you feel them as well. Well, you palpate this breast and you know something is wrong. You don't need an X-ray for that. So, fortunately, we have this mammography. Here our radiologist is taking the images as well. And on mammography, we use low voltage in the X-ray tube and we have high resolution images. Until recently, all these examinations were done with film and not digitally because the digital technique was not good enough. But today, the digital technique is even better than film, so now it's also digitized. But these images are beautiful for looking at the breast parenchyma or the tissue of the breast. So that's why this is used for screening. It's cheap, It's simple. You can take several views of the breast and you see the breast tissue. But of course, when you have silicone implants, you have a problem. I mean, this is the breast tissue. We see that, but you also see the silicone implant very well because silicone has high density. And because X-ray is just about putting X-ray radiation through the breast, and the implant will stop almost everything that comes through, and you don't see anything behind the implants. So, well, you can say something about the breast tissue in front here, and you can take different projections just to see other parts of the breast. But there will always be a problem with mammography and silicone implants because you have these areas that are not visualized. So that is a problem. That's why it's important to inform the women that have implants that before you're operated, you need to know that there is a problem with diagnostics, because mammography is the imaging modality of choice for screening. And I'll speak more about MRI later. But the problem with MRI, we could have used MRI for screening, but the problem is, even though MRI has very high sensitivity, it's magnificent for looking at tumors, and at least when you use intravenous contrast, these tumors almost glow in the pictures. They're beautifully depicted. But the problem is, other things do as well. So the specificity is too low for screening. So if you screen a healthy population with MRI, you might find the tumors, but you might have a lot of false positives as well. So even though MRI is a beautiful imaging method, we don't use it for screening. You can do it on some very specific people groups, like those who have mutations for like BRCA1 and those mutations, then you might use MRI. But for the healthy, normal population, the specificity is too low. You get too many false positives. You get too many unnecessary biopsies. You get too many worried women. So we don't do that. So we have to use mammography. And therefore, we have to say there is a problem. It's not totally uncomplicated. With saline implants, it's a bit better, but still you see that these implants, they are like huge shadows in the picture, and the diagnostics of those small calcifications may be very difficult. You see calcifications here as well, but those are just small calcifications in the capsule around the implant. So these are not tumor calcifications. These are just small calcifications around the implant. But even with saline implants, it is a problem in diagnostics. There is possible to do something. You can do the Eklund technique, where you just push the implant backwards and you press the breast tissue between the film holder and the compression paddle. And then you might just push the implant backwards, and then almost all the breast tissue will be visualized on the image. So when you do that, you can just push away the implant and the breast tissue with the possible tumors will come into the image. So that makes it a much better. So routinely we use the Eklund technique when we do mammography on women with implants. However, it's still not as good as without the implant. Here's just also shown how this tumor, we see the tumor very well here, and you see the tumor on ultrasound and on MRI as well. Here we see how the contrast is enhancing within the tumor on the MRI image. Some authors write that there is also an advantage with the implants because you more easily may palpate the tumor. And that might be true. There are done some studies about that. At least when the implant is subpectoral, it lifts elevates the whole breast tissue, and you have something firm to palpate against when you are looking for tumors in the breast. When you are palpating the breast, you might more easily feel those small tumors. But still we have an imaging problem because many cancers are not discovered by palpation, but with imaging techniques. So therefore we still use mammography screening for these women, and if there is something we don't know what is, maybe we have to use ultrasound as well, and in selected cases we use magnetic resonance imaging. Of course, you might have a huge implant rupture like this one. This is the silicone implant within the breast, and this is where all the silicone goes out of the implant and into the tissue within the breast and subcutaneously around the implant within the breast of this woman. So, I mean, if you have this kind of huge extracapsular implant rupture, you may see it very well on the mammography as well. But of course, only 10 to 15% of the implant ruptures are extracapsular. I mean, 80 to 90% of all ruptures are intracapsular, and you won't see them on a mammography. So we're going to look more also on other imaging techniques and how to see if there is a leak or how to see if there is an implant rupture that is not visualized on traditional mammography and is not possible to discover just by palpation alone. This is an extracapsular rupture where you see the silicone is just coming out of the fibrous capsule. I mean, you have the implant shell, and outside the implant shell you have the fibrous capsule that is made by the body, and that's where you have the capsular contracture, of course, when that comes. But anyhow, even though you don't have the capsular contraction, you still have a capsule around made by tissue. And if not only the shell of the implant is ruptured, but the capsule as well, then you might have silicon outside the capsule and freely going into the breast and the surrounding tissues. And sometimes you even have silicone that is going with the lymph and going to the axilla, and then you have some problems with depicting this or making images of this. But as we shall see, you might then use MRI to visualize this leakage. Ultrasound is an interesting possibility, at least for those women that are not able to go through an MRI. And also we use ultrasound a lot in connection with mammography. When we see something on mammography that we're not sure about, then we go to ultrasound, because the ultrasound machine is always in the room beside, and we just go up to the other room and we just make an ultrasound that's very easy, no radiation, easy, fast, quick, very fine, and then we see if there is anything we can see an ultrasound. So we do that a lot, but the learning curve is really steep when looking for implant problems. I mean, those who are working with breast diagnostics usually look for tumors, and that's their main job. Looking for intracapsular implant rupture is not very easy on ultrasound, and you have to see some to be sure whether this is an artifact or if this really is an intracapsular rupture. You might have some specific signs, like this snowstorm sign. This is almost like Tromsø in the winter. When you have small droplets of silicone into the breast, then you will have this shadow or this snowstorm pattern that is not that clean. It's not like when you see in a normal implant, it should be homogeneous. It's really homogeneous to see on the ultrasound, but here it's almost like a snowstorm. So that's a sign that shows that there might be some free silicone here or a leak. Here you have a so-called stepladder sign. You see the steps down here, and that's when you have an intracapsular rupture and the silicone and the shell of the implant is stacked like a stepladder. And this might look like some of the artifacts you may also see, like reverb artifacts and other things you might see. So it's not really easy, but it's possible to see an ultrasound. So at least for those women who cannot do an MRI, this is an option. But it might be a problem with it, because on many hospitals, if the radiologist is not used to seeing that, and most places we are not, because this we don't do this a lot. So ultrasound is not, it's not very easy to do these diagnostics on ultrasound, but it is a possibility, at least. Then what about computer tomography? Well, computer tomography is a beautiful modality, makes very fine pictures, and if we see on this chest, you see the silicone implants as well, and it's not difficult to see them. And in this patient, you see that these implants, they are smooth and fine, homogeneous inside. You see nothing inside them that is wrong. I mean, it's homogeneous, it's all fine, it looks anatomically shaped. It's no problem at all. However, we don't use CT if we don't have to, because of the radiation. We'll speak more about that, and because MRI is usually a lot better. But we have the possibility, when we do a CT scanning, we always have these multi-planar reconstructions, because you just like slices in one in the axial direction, and then you may reconstruct this in all the other directions. So when you have the axial images here, it's not very difficult to make the coronal plane or the sagittal plane as well, and we do that routinely. So for some purposes, this may be very useful if you want to look at how things are shaped, not only looking at it in one direction, but looking at, for instance, this implant in different directions. So if we look at the next level here, we have the coronal plane and the sagittal plane. And then you might see how it is shaped on the thoracic wall as well, or how the implant is shaped from the side. And sometimes we see, like this implant with a lot of calcifications in the capsule, it's very easy to see on the CT, but this one would have been visible on a plain X-ray as well. So we don't use CT for this. And the problem is radiation. However, in some cases it might be useful. Like this woman, she has stacked implants. I mean, she has two implants on each side. She has been reconstructed with implants because she had the bilateral mastectomy. And if you want to see this in different directions, it's very useful. Like here, we can see that these implants are stacked upon each other, and we see that they actually make this slope in the thoracic wall after some years. So here we have an image that shows how the thoracic wall may be deformed by the implants being there over a long time, at least when you have these big implants and you have two of them on each side. The problem, as I said, with using computer tomography is the radiation dose. One simple X-ray, that's a very small dose. That's like the radiation that we all have every day because of radiation from space and everything around us. So one daily dose of radiation, that's one plain X-ray front, chest X-ray front. That's not much. That's the same as you get extra by just taking an airplane from Europe to the States. The extra dose you get from space in one day is like one chest X-ray. So that's not very dangerous. But just one computer tomography of the thorax is about 300 times that dose, between 300 and 400. So that means that just one CT scanning of the chest is like 1 year of radiation. And then you don't want to do that when you don't have to. So if there are alternatives, you use the alternatives. Of course, when you need a CT, you do a CT. But if you can do MRI, or you can do ultrasound or mammography, you do that. So you just have to think about it. I mean, if you take a chest X-ray, an abdominal CT, you might have 600 times the one dose you have in one chest X-ray. So then we're going to speak about magnetic resonance imaging. Of course, you have some limitations. like Britt here, she's taken up off everything that is magnetic, as you see, and and you can't go in there. I mean, we have had really bad accidents, not in our department, but in other hospitals. People have been killed in these machines just because some people are coming in with some magnetic objects. I mean, I heard about the Rikshospital in Oslo. When they first had the first MRI machine in 1987, one man came in with his bag, and he had this this printer. Just a normal printer made of plastic and some metal in it. And he came into the MRI room, and his bag went up, and the printer just went out of the bag into the machine and just was crashed. So they used 1 week just picking out all those small parts of that printer. So, and I mean, this magnetic field is huge. So if you have a pacemaker, don't go in there. You might be dead. And if you have some, you might have old clips in the brain that are magnetic. Don't go in there. The magnetic field is huge. So, I mean, if you have 30-year-old clips that might be magnetic, they might be just shaken off, and you have a brain bleeding or something, hemorrhage in the brain. So you don't want that. So you have some contraindications, and of course you also, I mean, this tunnel is not very big, so some women they are just scared to death by going in there, at least when they're big. So, and some patients are too big. They are too big just to fit into the machine. So that might be a problem as well. But for most people, it's not a problem. I mean, if you're normally sized, you fit into the machine, no problem at all. Now, this is the normal position for MRI imaging. You lie on your back, and everything is, you're just lying here, relaxing, listening to the radio, and the images are taken during half an hour or three quarters of an hour. But when we do breast imaging, using this body coil, this big coil within the machine, makes coarse pictures. They're not very good for looking at small details in a breast. So therefore, we have these dedicated breast coils. And with dedicated breast coil, the woman might put her breasts into this coil. She is lying prone, having her breast inside the coil, and then we get beautiful pictures of the breast tissue. And we might also take several pictures with different so-called sequences, where we depict different physical properties of the tissue with different kinds of sequences. So as you see here, this is the same patient during the same examination. This is a T2 weighted image. This is stir. Here we have silicon only, or we have silicon suppressed. We might have different sequences showing different physical properties of the tissue. So like this one, this is a sequence that makes silicone black. So you don't, it's just like the silicone is not there at all, it's just a black hole in the breast. But on this one, you just see it's the silicone only, so you don't see anything except silicone. And that's wonderful when you want to look at silicone and see if there is silicone in the axilla, or if there is silicone otherwise, other places and in the breast, if silicone is migrating, you can use this protocol. And you have those normal fat suppressed like this one. You see the fat is black, even though other things are depicted in a normal way. Or you have this T2 where water is white, and you see also the fat tissue is more white here. So we can look at different physical properties, or we can make images in different directions, or just silicon only in another direction, or you can reconstruct the implants in different directions. So this is very useful. And when we're looking for implant failure, it's also very useful because we can use different sequences and dedicated breast coil to have very detailed images of the breasts. And we might look for instance, intracapsular rupture that is not easily detected with other imaging modalities. Or we can make reconstructions like this one, or this one, or this one, where we have reconstructed the outside of the patient. Even though this examination is done to look at the implants, we might also make a reconstruction of the breast. how it looks. It's not very useful always, but sometimes it's fun. You can just turn it around in space, see how it looks. I mean, this is a patient with anatomically shaped implants. We've done a study on this, just to see how the anatomical implants are shaped inside the patient. And also, you can reconstruct and see how the breasts are shaped. Or this one. This is a silicon-only sequence done on a patient with the anatomically shaped implant inside the patient. And I've made a reconstruction here of the implant that is inside the patient. And I made a 3D model of it. And we can just turn the model around in space and see how the silicon implant is shaped and how it looks. Now, this is not a photography. This is an MRI. And you might see the shape, the wrinkles, everything on the silicon implants. Or you can make a reconstruction of both implants with the silicon-only protocol. And we can see how the implants are shaped and how they are on the chest wall. Of course, this is not routinely done because the radiologists have to work on this and make the reconstructions. But for some special occasions, this might be useful. And when we have intracapsular rupture, you don't see anything on the mammography. I mean, you might see stepladder sign on ultrasound. On a CT, you might see some lines within the implant, but the imaging modality of choice is, of course, magnetic resonance imaging, where we can see that something is absolutely wrong within this implant. You don't have to be a radiologist to see that this is something strange. Somebody has put their spaghetti in here, and that's what its name also is, the Lingwin sign, or the spaghetti sign, we see inside the implant there. You might see some of it here as well. So for the patient that cannot do an MRI, it is possible to use CT, but MRI is the best choice. Before we look at how we can diagnose these ruptures, we should just have a short look at the different generations. I know some authors say that there are at least five generations of silicon implants, but there seems to be some consensus that when we're just speaking roughly, we have three generations of silicon implants. So just for making it simple, we can speak about three generations, and they behave differently on MRI, and they behave differently in the patient. These first ones that came out in 1962, was it that? Yeah, I think it was 62 that Dow Corning came with the first implant. They were actually anatomically shaped. That's interesting, because now they're coming back, but the first ones were. This had a thick implant shell and a firm silicone gel. So these are not very prone to rupture of the shell, and if you have a leak, it will not be this very fluid-like silicone gel. It's rather firm silicone gel. That's the first generation from beginning of the 60s until the mid-70s. And the second generation is this one, where you often have silicone gel bleed because the implant shell is thin and is a very viscous silicone gel. I mean, this was to make it feel more natural, to have soft implants. And the thought is very good, but you have problems with silicone gel bleed. This is where we just put the finger on the implant after removing it. You see some of the fibrous capsule here, and this is the implant shell, and you see the finger when you take it up from the implant, you see strains here of silicone gel that has been bleeding through the shell of the implant. And if you have a hole in the implant, you see that this gel is very viscous, it's not stiff, it's not firm, it's almost like some, what to say, slimy matter, almost. And that's what we might see on MRI as well when we have these ruptures, that these ones, they behave differently. And the third generation silicone implants from the late 80s until present, I know there are different subtypes here, but speaking roughly, you have those multi-layer shell and thick silicone gel implants. when, like for instance, this memory gel implant from Mentor is cut in two, you see that the silicone gel is very thick and it's not floating out of the implant, even though this one is cut in two. So in these implants, you don't have so much silicone floating around when you have a rupture. It stays in place in a way. So what about these so-called uncollapsed infracapsular ruptures? Well, that's what's happening when you have a rupture inside. I mean, the shell is ruptured, but you have an intact capsule. There is not a rupture of the fibrous capsule around the implant. Then you might have this phenomenon. Well, normal implants also might have these radial folds, and those are just the wrinkles on the surface of the implant. So when you follow these, you might see that they come in one place, they go into the implant, and they go out again. So that's just a normal infolding of the shell. That's normal. We see that all the time. So that's nothing to be scared about. That's normal. But, yeah, this is an image of it, where you see this force just going in. And that's happening all the time because the implant is rather soft. But when you have this so-called inverted teardrop, that might be a sign of silicone that has been going out of the shell and that is trapped in between the implant shell and the fibrous capsule around. So then you get this inverted teardrop sign. As we see here, it's the shell, the implant going in, and you have silicone on both sides. It might also be because of leakage or silicone bleed. The noose sign. Then you have this noose-shaped form here. Like you also see here, like a rope. That's the noose, like the rope. And then you have trapped silicone in between the shell of the implant and the fibrous capsule around. So it looks much like the latter one. And this is a sign of intracapsular rupture, but the implant is still intact and not collapsed. You might have an intracapsular rupture where the implant just collapses. And you see that the implant shell is folding inwards and the implant is just lying here like spaghetti. And that's the so-called Lingwin sign. We might have an early intracapsular rupture like this, or you might have a Lingwin sign or collapsed shell or spaghetti sign where the implants just collapsed inside, but the fibrous capsule is still around. And these are the patients, if you've heard about implant rupturing during mammography, and some authors even write that there might be a popping sound when the implant just explodes in the mammography machine. Usually, I think this is because you have an intracapsular rupture. The implant is already destructed. It's already destroyed inside the fibrous capsule, and the fibrous capsule might be calcified. It might be weak. So when you just press it, it just cracks like an egg. And then you hear the sound, and then it all comes out. But it was not the mammography that destroyed the implant. The implant was destroyed. It happened just that the fibrous capsule was destroyed during mammography. And here you have like this spaghetti inside the implant. And then you have the extracapsular rupture. And that was what's happening when you have the intracapsular rupture, and in addition, the fibrous capsule around is ruptured as well. And then silicone might migrate out in the breast and even going further away. So this is where you see the silicone going out. Extravasation of silicone like this. So on this silicone-only sequence, it's very easy to see how the silicone is leaking out. And if you have a patient like this, you have both. Here you see how the Lingwin sign or the spaghetti sign shows how the the implant is just collapsed inside the capsule here, but in addition, you see that silicone is leaking out, and this patient actually had extracapsular rupture on her left side, and she had an intracapsular rupture on her right side. And these are normally the second generation implants, because they have this very fluid-like silicone, and they have the weaker shell that more easily is broken, and you have it all falling together here with this thin shell of the implant just collapsing. Yeah, any questions?
Do you have any job offers at the radio opportunity?
If job offers, he wants to do work there. Work together with Vic.
Oh yes, yes, you can come and visit her. She's there almost every day, she just loves her job.
Yes. Is there a delay in cancer diagnostic with silicone?
Well, there are different studies. Some studies claim that it is not a delay. So I'm not sure. There are different opinions and different studies. What we see in daily work, at least, is that it is more difficult to find the tumors. But maybe these women are more alert that they might have a tumor. Might be that they're more clever at palpating their breasts. I don't know. But I don't think we have really proof that these patients are too late, that these patients are treated too late. But it's a bit difficult because we have problems with some of the tumors not being visible on mammography. But I don't have a clear conclusion on that. Yes?
Can I just ask, for a normal chest x-ray, so there shouldn't be any problem seeing pathology on a plain chest
x-ray?
No.
Because a normal implant is barely visible. You might see the shadow of it, but it's no problem. And even when you have these calcifications, as I showed you on the first image, you see the pneumonia. You see the most important things in the lung. So for normal x-ray, no problem. It's for the breast tissue, the mammography, that is a problem.
So that was an absolutely brilliant talk.
Thank you.
Your MRI reconstruction of anatomical implants, have you actually looked at round-bodied implants, standard round-bodied implants, to see, because what was fascinating about it was to see the way the implants were being deformed on the chest wall and the shape that they took. And I think it would be potentially more interesting to actually look at conventional round-bodied implants, because of course the argument with those is that of course they tend to adopt sort of quasi-anatomical shape, and I must say I'd be very interested. Have you done anything like that at all?
I've not done a study on that, but
okay.
It's very easy to sort of look at normal multiplanar reconstructions or just the satellite view. You might see the shape of the implant. So my impression is that there is a clear difference between the anatomically shaped implants and the round implants.
Okay.
But it also has to do whether if you're taking a breast coil, lying prone or lying supine, you also have different shape of the implant. So it's I think there is a difference, but we haven't done a study on the round implants.
You might wonder about that double implant patient.
Yeah.
Well, that's not regular procedure. But what happened was that we used expanders. And then halfway through the expansion period, we noticed that the volume decreased. And and I couldn't understand it, and then after a 4-month period, she came in to replace them with the anatomical implants, and we saw this cavity, a concave cavity into the chest wall. So the pure pressure of the expander with rigid structures over meant that the expansion went inwards instead of outwards.
Yeah.
So therefore we had to put in two.
Yeah.
To just like in a Poland syndrome, for example, where you also need the extra projection to get symmetry, right? So, any more questions?
Yes.
About low-dose CT, is that a possibility for this?
I don't think it's a possibility for looking at the implant, because you could try, but I think if you're looking for those tiny changes that are inside, for if you're looking for intracapsular ruptures, I think you have a problem with low dose, because then you get coarse images with low contrast, or at least you just have white spots and black spots. You don't have all those fine gray shades. So I think if you are doing a CT, because you can't do an MRI scan, you should do it regular CT, and just think this is necessary. But one important point is you should never do all this radiology if you're not planning to do something surgically afterwards, taking the consequences of this, of course. But if this is what is necessary to make a decision, of course you do a CT. Of course you don't think radiation. But if you can, these are young, healthy women, many of them. So we don't like to put radiation on them when we don't have to.
Thank you very much, Sven. Very much.